podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hill and Hills Podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And I think we're both about to lose it tonight.
Hurry. Let's hurry up and talk before something else happens.
Oh my God. We just spent, 30 minutes trying to figure out why the hell I kept freezing for no freaking reason.
Oh my God, we did. Yeah. Well, it wasn't only you, because in the middle of trying to figure out why you were freezing and your camera wasn't working, my dog sat on the power cord and turned off the whole computer. My computer.
So basically, I think we just quit.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Make sure you check out our socials.
But no, on a more serious note, we do need to talk about Camille for a second.
What? Talk about what?
Camille.
Oh. Oh.
You know exactly what it's about, because I've already told you.
I do, and I'm very excited.
But just to really irritate her.
Twist the knife.
She's so mad. She's so mad. I told my mom, my dad, and my brother.
Okay, so I need to know the whole story, because I know the basics. I know the bare minimum. I need the deets.
Okay, so I took Mill down to my brother's house because she was going, like, basically on a camping trip with him this weekend. And since I was already up there, and I'm like, well, I already have to go down. So I just took her for my parents so they didn't have to. And I had some music going, but I'm probably the most annoying person with music when I'm driving, and I don't want the passenger to have control, because I don't want to listen to Mill's music. I want to listen to my music.
You're driving, it's your car.
Uh-huh. And a Greatest Showman song came on, and I skipped it. And she's like, but I've been practicing. I literally practiced, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't care. Look at me skip some more songs that you want to listen to, because I don't want to listen to them. Also, the other part is, like, I just didn't want, like, I like all of the songs. I just don't want to listen to them right now.
Yeah, not in the mood.
Yeah. So anyways. Okay. She said something. She was like, well, I always do that one karaoke. No, she said karaoke, and she did not like that I called her out. I said, oh, karaoke? No, karaoke. She tried so hard to play it off as though she didn't say karaoke. And I mean so hard. She was like, it's karaoke. Like, I'm saying it wrong. And I was like, I know what it is, turd, but it's karaoke now.
Now it's karaoke. It will forever be.
Ooh.
Karaoke. It'll be teriyaki. Karaoke. Yeah. I can't even get it right.
Karaoke. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, karaoke.
And she tried so hard to play it off. Like, I don't care. I don't care who you tell. I don't care what you do anymore. Oh, she cares.
Oh, really? Because we're telling the world.
Everyone that listens to us. The entire world. Yeah, Mel. Let me hear it. I know you're going to call me. Please! I know. Because she also called me after her episode aired.
Mm-hmm.
And how dare you keep those cleaning the chore list in there? Yeah, I did. I told you to take it out. I don't care. Try to help mom and dad out.
The power.
Mm-hmm. So she's going to be real upset when she realizes, because my dad's letting her listen to the entire episode right now. Oh. She hasn't listened to the whole thing. Well, I mean, she's already heard it. But she hasn't heard the edited version, right?
Okay, right, yeah.
And so she's, her and my dad are listening to it whenever they're in the car together.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad said they just got through the chores part, which means my dad has not told her that he knows about the dancing with a boy part. Mm-hmm.
Clutch pearls. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. If only to be a fly on the wall.
So anyways, you're welcome, Mill. I did what I said I would. It was chipmunk voices on that part, but I never agreed to not send it to dad.
I do also have to say, she is much braver than I am, because I do not go back and listen. I will have friends like text me and be like, oh my God, this happened on this, or you said this, and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know the context. Yeah, that was, I want to say weeks ago, but that was like week ago.
Mm-hmm.
No idea. Do you know how many stupid conversations I have had in between that time?
Yeah. And probably still a good 50% of those are with Bryce. I don't remember.
Ton. Okay, let me tell you. I need more info.
Yeah, so you gotta give me context. But my point, I have to listen to him back because I edit everything, so. Mm-hmm. But after I edit it, I never listen to it again.
Yeah, just black it out. Move on. There's some things that never die, like Kois and Karaoke.
Karaoke will never die now.
I know there's more, but those are the two that...
Those are the two that haven't died.
Yeah, those are the two that really stand out.
Mm-hmm. Those are the ones that make us now Helen Hills Podcast. Specifically Kois.
Yeah. Did I say Kiosk or did I say Kois?
You said Kois. Like, just now you said Kois. Yeah, you said how it's now said.
Yeah, at this point, I don't even know how I say it anymore.
You know what? All of our listeners probably say Kois now.
You're welcome.
I know I say Kois.
Yeah, but you say it to be a jerk.
What's your point?
Yeah, there you go.
Kois as in kiosk. Because Amanda said it.
Oh my God.
For how long did you say it as Kois? Your entire life, basically?
My whole ass life. Yes. 34 years.
For 34 years, Amanda called kiosks Kois? Until I very aggressively corrected her. Anyways. So, that's part of my update. I have another part to my update.
Okay.
I have at least one very solid crawler.
Is it JJ?
It is Leo.
He caught up.
Uh-huh. He gets up and chases you around. He is a solid crawler.
But I believe I got a video of Leo pretty close to standing.
What are we doing?
Earlier, and no, JJ was standing. JJ. Leo was behind him, pulling on the onesie, like he was like, "No,
sit your ass back down."
I thought that was pretty funny. He's like, "Look, I just got the crawling, bro."
And JJ's like, "I still don't have the crawling." So, but yeah, so that's. I feel like there was something else. Oh, because it took me 2 hours to get home today. I treated myself.
Oh, what'd you get?
Spring fling. I didn't remember.
I think I had that one the other day. That's the water-based one?
Uh-uh. That's the strawberry breeze you're thinking.
No, I had James pick one up for me.
Oh, it's not. Spring fling is Dr. Pepper, strawberry, coconut, vanilla.
I have not had that one. You're correct. Because that thing, caffeine.
Caffeine. It's caffeinated.
I had him get the other summer breeze, maybe?
Mango breeze, or there's like just there's one that has mango, strawberries, and then coconut and water. But I don't know what one you're talking about.
So, you know, when like back in the days where we were healthy and we used to go running and stuff, you know, when you would go running and you would step in a water puddle and it would kind of just sit in the bottom of your shoe until you put your foot in your shoe again and then it oozed out.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather drink that than drink anything mango ever.
I mean, I'm not arguing. I'm just kind of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Your options were Unbreakable, The Fighter, Tiki Tiki, Summer Splash.
That one.
Water, sugar-free pineapple, strawberry puree, fresh... Ooh, that one does sound good. Fresh lemon.
It was pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll have to try it.
Very good.
As long as it's not sparkling water, because that's just gross.
No, I told him there, because I was on the phone with him, and he was like, you want flat water or sparkling water? And I was like, James, literally, how dare you? If you ever bring me spicy water, I will revolt.
Mm-hmm.
I will burn my own house down, unless insurance asks, then it was an accident.
I am very tempted. Next time I go to replace and get a strawberry breeze to replace the water with Sprite.
That sounds delicious.
I don't know what it is.
Next time we both go at the same time or on the same day, I say we do that.
It's not going to be on a Sunday, so.
I can go on a Sunday. I might go this Sunday. Did you get the Snapchat where I sent you their hours?
Mm-hmm. Did you notice I ignored it?
I did. I loved it.
So what Amanda's referring to, because I just flipped her off, is Swig, which is, last I checked, based out of Utah. It is a Utah company. Uh-huh. In Utah, they are closed on Sundays, but apparently everywhere else they can open their damn doors to provide damn soda for other people.
7 days a week.
Bullshit. Straight bullshit. I will say, though, they open a little bit earlier here.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to stay. Right now, they don't open until 11. I don't know if that's going to stay a thing. Yeah, because they're still...
open at 8.
No, right now it's 11. I think because they're still new.
No, they need to start opening at 8.
Girl, who you telling? Luckily, I mean,
they open at 7:30 here.
They do not here. But there's a lot of things they don't do. So they don't, like, they don't open until 11. They don't do, like, split orders. So, like, I went every time. I go almost every day. Okay, let's be real.
I have created a monster. Let me make this very clear. This monster has now 2 Swig cups.
I threw the mouse. Not only do I have 2 Swig cups, we opened that store. We were the first order taken. And I think I mentioned that to the guy taking the sassy one the other day. I think I mentioned that to him. I said something and he's like, have you been here before? And I was like, oh yeah, I was like, we've been here since day one. I think we were your first customer. And he was like, oh really? I was like, yeah. Centennial Bank. And he was like, the 20 orders. I was here that day. I was like, yeah.
You're like,
happy opening.
That was us.
Yeah, that was all me. That was my idea. I got my department free drinks, but hey, it was delicious. And now I come back probably 4 days a week. So
you're welcome.
Yeah.
I created a monster is what I'm hearing.
It's so good though. And it's like, to people who are like, what the hell is Swig? So Swig is like I don't know how you describe it in Utah, dirty where it's based. Soda. Dirty soda. I describe it as like a specialty drink shop. So like they have sodas, they have waters, they have energy drinks, and they mix them up. They got so many flavors. I'm talking
That's
like.
That's why they call it a dirty soda, is because you take a soda and you put other stuff in it and yes. make it a dirty soda.
But whenever I tell people, like, oh, it's got other stuff in it, you know, people think of, like, Sonic flavors, right? Like cherry, pineapple. Mm-hmm. No. They have, like, toffee, toasted marshmallow, mm-hmm. blackberry, cupcake flavor, like.
Oh, yeah. Ugh, don't do the cupcake.
It's really good. And on top of that, it's only, like, $3-4 for like a 32-ounce, 40-ounce. They have a Route 44 too, which I've never gotten because that just feels over the top.
A Route 44?
Do y'all not have those? A Route 44 is like, you know, it's Sonic. Sonic has the Route 44s and they're just the huge drink.
Are you saying like a 44-ounce drink?
I don't know. It's a Route 44.
I don't know what a Route 44 is.
Am I making this up?
Route 44. You know what? That comes up not what I think you're thinking.
You got to put drink.
At Sonic? Oh, it's a drink at Sonic.
No, it's a size.
Oh, it's just a 44. Okay, we just call that 44 ounces.
I've always heard it referred. I've always had it referred to as a Route 44.
No, I've never heard of that. But okay, here's the thing is I'm in a completely different state where we are caffeine obsessed.
Oh.
Because can you imagine getting up at 7:30 in the morning and going to get a 44-ounce Dr. Pepper of any kind?
I'm pretty sure other countries make fun of us for that.
You know what? I don't get the sodas. I get the strawberry breeze. It's a water face.
And you can get everything sugar-free. They have like Coke Zero, Sprite Zero. I don't know. It's really good.
It's an addiction. Okay, listen. Part of it is we need our caffeine in the morning. And if you're LDS, you can't have coffee.
Why can you not have coffee, but you can have caffeine?
I think you're not supposed to have caffeine either.
Oh.
But no coffee, no booze. You gotta find a compromise.
And it's soda with coconut cream.
Yes. And actually, the coffee thing might have been lifted. I don't know. I don't keep up on the trends of the LDS church.
Are they not just posted on the street corners when you drive to work? Oh, you don't go to work. That's why you miss them.
Yeah, that's why I miss them.
Okay.
Okay. They are not supposed to consume caffeine. So,
well, I mean, they are water-based, and the root beer is caffeine-free there.
I don't quite think that's what people are drinking, though.
I don't think they're
drinking the Waikikis and the
they have energy drink, for God's sake.
The Revivers. Yeah, no, I think this is like the people that are like, this is my guilty pleasure.
Honestly, if a soda is your guilty pleasure, there can be so much. It could be meth.
You could be a crackhead.
Right? So, you know what? If you want a soda, you go get you a soda.
Look, I'm not complaining. It's fine.
I'm not anyways. Either. We finally have one. I love it.
Now, she finally understands. We talk a lot about Swig right now because it's still new to Amanda, okay? Mm-hmm. It's not new to me. Amanda's heard me talk about Swig I don't even know how many times before she got one. And I know she thought I was losing it. Actually, I was, like, crack obsessed, and they were putting crack in the sodas I was drinking.
The first Swig I ever got, I didn't even drink. I bought them and didn't even try them. So it's about time they came down.
That's true. Because you bought me a Swig once.
Mm-hmm.
I had to think about that. I was like, what is she talking? It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. At least one. I think it was one. I remember it was one.
I think it was while I was in the hospital.
No, it was the first transfer. Was it also while you were in the hospital?
I know you sent me something while I was in the hospital. Maybe it was just, it was an horchata from Beto's.
That's what it was. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it had to have been the transfer because it was the first failed transfer after I was like, yeah, didn't stay.
I didn't know what to do. So I was like, here's some food and a drink.
Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah. And then you had babies and I was like, I could send you flowers or I could send food. Nope. Here's some food and a drink. This is how I show my affection.
I said rocks. Okay. Anyways, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Well, I just told you.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You talked for half an hour. Let's see.
20 minutes. Thank you very much.
I don't have any notes on here about what to talk about. Well, I do, actually. I said, hi, it's been like 3 days, but then we pushed this recording off a couple times. Let's see. What's new? So Lee was sick the other day.
Yeah, I heard that rumor.
Okay. I'm over the daycare right now. And like, my daycare's great, and I will never take my kids anywhere else. Part of the reason I took the job I took is so I didn't have to change their daycare. Okay, I love their daycare. But Wednesday, I get a text message. He's running a fever. I gotta go get him at 3:00. And so I was like, well, I'll just go get him and leave Annie there. Nope, couldn't do that because the gate that you enter to go up to the daycare, Annie was playing with her friend right in front of that gate. So, nope, she was coming with me. And then his fever broke that same night. Bryce, I felt so bad for him because he started crying. And you may have heard him a minute ago. He's still a little fussy. But he started crying, and Lee is my good sleeper. So I go in there. He is just like soaking wet. He sweat through his onesie because his fever finally broke. Sweat through his onesie. There was a puddle of sweat like on the sheet. I had to change the sheet. I was like, oh my God. So I imagine he was just so cold. So I had to like change him, you know, change the sheets, get him a bottle. And then the next day he was fine. He was still a little clingy. He wouldn't let go of his little stuffed stingray, but yeah, he was fine after that. We took Annie to school. We had to pretend that I was still going to work. And I had to carry Lee into the daycare with me. So she, because, I mean, if she knew I was staying home and he was staying with me, there's no way that child was going in that building.
Right. She was absolutely not happy.
Yeah. So I got, like, half-dressed for work. I just put on my jeans and my boots and just went up there in my, the shirt that I slept in.
Mm-hmm.
And, after she got there, she was just clueless. And we snuck out again. And then we went to Waffle House. And little homie ate good.
Hey, that's what matters, right?
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, are you ready to talk about some socials? since it's
yeah.
We just talked like 10 minutes about Swig again.
Oh. They're not a sponsor, guys. We just really like
they
them.
They should be at this point. They won't be.
Yeah. They won't. No. A Mormon-based company sponsoring it. Can you imagine?
Yes, please. It's not even a Mormon-based company. It's just a Mormon-based state. Ow. All right, well, let's talk about some socials because we have them. We've got X Helen Heels Pod, Facebook and Instagram Helen Heels Podcast. We've been posting pictures on those. We have our email, so if you have something you want to suggest, words of encouragement, whatever it is, HelenHeelsPodcast@gmail.com. We have our Discord up, so if you want to join us on Discord, you can join us there. We also have our tree, the link tree up and going. So
Chris, I was like, Christmas tree. I don't...
okay, guys, I don't do notes on these, so I go off of memory. So when I forget things, it's because I genuinely forgot what the hell I was supposed to say.
Look who you're talking to. I am not making fun of you.
The Coist girl.
What the hell? I was talking about word recall. I was so aggressive.
Anyways, so we do have our link tree up, so if you want to or are struggling to find anything, just Google Helen Heels Podcast link tree. We should be the first thing that comes up. You'll see the logo has the links for all the things. If you guys do enjoy listening to us and want to support us, be sure to tell friends, family, whoever to listen as well. That way we can continue to grow our listener base and provide you these episodes. And then with that being said, are you ready for a story?
I am, because a little birdie told me again and again and again and again, I'm guessing it must have been a parrot, how good this story was.
I didn't say how good it was. I said I was excited for it. Get your shit together.
Oh, okay. My bad. Okay. Please forgive me. Will you ever find it in your cold, dead heart?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's funny you should say that. Okay. Anyways. So here's the thing. I'm a little true crime down. Okay.
Okay.
Because it felt like I did a million true crimes back to back to back to back. Because I did. Casey Anthony, two parts, and then I did the prank episode on Mill, and then didn't get to do a paranormal because of all the stuff with Cody's work, and then I went straight into Brock Turner, and then finally got a break, and then when I started looking at what I needed to do for like a true crime, I was like, I can't. I was a little true crimed out, and I needed a mental break. So this one, not a true crime story per se, but it's intense. It is a survival story. It blows my mind every single time I hear this. Like, every time I hear this story, I'm just shook to the core.
No, I already hate this story. I already hate this story. Do you know what it is? No, I don't know. I don't know who this person is, but I see the photos and I've got a general sense of what happened. And I do not understand why people do this.
I don't know what sense you have.
Do you want me to just tell you my guess?
Yeah, tell everyone your guess.
Does he get stuck exploring a freaking cavern?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Okay. I know we won't talk about. That's one I'll talk about another time. That's not a survival story, but a really terrible one that my parents brought up to me today. Anyways, it's not. That's not what this one is.
Okay.
So, have you ever heard of Erin Lee Ralston? I'm assuming no.
No.
All right. Well, Erin was born October 27th, 1975. He was born in Marion, Ohio, which is considered North Central Ohio, but his family would relocate to Denver, Colorado sometime in the 1980s. Sources said he was about 12 years old at the time of the move. He would go on to attend Cherry Creek High School, which is in Greenwood Village in Colorado. And during his time in Colorado, he would learn to ski, to backpack, and he just, I guess he loved both. Like, I'm just not that kind of gal that likes cold sports, so I'll never understand winter sports. And also, he started, like, backpacking. And that's another thing I don't understand, because Cody's carrying the backpack, not me.
And you said he moved from Maryland to Colorado?
No, from Ohio. Marion.
Oh, Marion. Jesus Lord. Y'all, it's 9:30 at night.
For you. Took a while to get started. Okay, guys, we had technical difficulties.
Yeah. So, okay, so he's not a stranger to the cold.
No. I mean, even in Maryland, he's not a stranger to the cold.
Right. That was going to be my original point, but I could still go with it with Ohio.
Anyways, so he would go on to actually attend Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And during his time at Carnegie, he would actually serve as a resident assistant, study abroad. He was active in intramural sports. During the summers, Aaron would work as a rafting guide. And overall, he would receive his degree in mechanical engineering and French, and even minor in piano.
Okay, calm down. Like, oh, okay, we get it. You're smart and you're athletic.
And talented. Piano?
And talented. He's just and the whole package, ladies.
Damn.
Sorry, this isn't a dating show.
Sorry. Not actually, you know what? No, I'm not sorry, because most of our stories.
You know what? Not, yeah, you're right. Yeah,
we're not sorry, okay? Anyways. So, Aaron, he appeared to start his career off strong, and he started working for Intel, like, immediately.
Oh.
And he
like
would
the
work...
Intel.
The Intel.
Oh.
And he would work with them for 5 years, and during those 5 years, he would live in Chandler, Arizona, Tacoma, Washington, Albuquerque, New Mexico. Like, he traveled and moved around with them. And even while he was stuck behind a desk at Intel, Aaron was always chasing his next door adventure, his next challenge outside. Now, these hobbies of him of his were more than just hobbies. They were a passion for him. So much so that he would quit Intel in 2002. Some sources state he said working for a large corporation burned him out. His name's Zeus.
Okay.
Granted, mine's isn't a large corporation. Yeah. I mean, it's large enough, but, you know, same, same. So,
and what year was this? Sorry.
2002.
Okay, so this was kind of at the boom of... like millennium technology. Bum,
yeah.
Bum, bum, bum. No, wait, yep. That's IBM.
I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. So it's possible that he got burnt out because I imagine they were doing so much so fast.
I just don't think he was meant to sit behind a desk, honestly.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you're right. This guy was meant to be outside.
Yeah. Well, so he quits in 2002 so that he could actually go climb Denali. Do you know what that is?
That's a mountain.
It is. Hold on, Leo just changed where my screen was. Time out! Stop!
Okay, so Mount...
So Denali, what? I have it. Denali is the highest mountain peak in North America. It has an elevation of 20,310 feet above sea level. It, from what I found, it is the tallest mountain in the world from base to peak on land.
I thought Mount McKinley was the tallest.
But no, from base to peak. That's what you gotta understand, is it's not looking at sea level or anything. Base to peak.
Yeah, I thought that was for whatever Mount McKinley in Alaska.
You know what? I think Denali and McKinley are the same. I think.
Wait, what?
Yeah, hold on. Denali, I think they have two names.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah, Denali is federally designated as Mount McKinley.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
sorry,
well, first of all, I don't like that because that's confusing. Second of all, it's snowing there right now. Are we surprised?
No, not even a little bit. Sorry, I was like, what are we talking about, Mount McKinley? It's the same thing, okay?
Okay.
Well, and I knew that.
Really confusing.
That's fine. They're the same thing. So yes, you are correct, but I am also correct.
For once, I am correct. Shout it from the koisks.
All of the highest of the high koisks. So he quits to climb Denali. He also would move to Aspen, Colorado, so that he could actually pursue a life of climbing and mountaineering and whatever else he wanted to do. Which, okay, good on you.
Live your life, Aaron.
Now, when he moved to Aspen, he began working towards a goal of his, which was climbing all of Colorado's 14ers solo during wintertime.
What is a 14er?
I'll tell you in a second. Okay. But this goal is something that had never been recorded before.
Oh.
The 14ers are all mountains that have peaks over 14,000 feet in altitude. There are more than just one in Colorado. There are more than just the ones in Colorado. But in Colorado alone, there are some sources said 53, some said 59. So I went with 53 because officially that's what it said. And
does Aaron
a total...
know how to relax?
No. Okay. You want to know how many 14ers there are in the U.S.?
In the U.S.? Let me guess. Is it a double digit or a triple digit?
That's guessing with a hint. Do you really want a hint or to guess right away?
I want the hint I asked for.
Two digits.
Two digits. 74.
96.
Okay, I feel like you're right at 100. Like, can we just, like, pile some dirt on, like, we're somewhere. Right there, guys.
Just get a round, nice round number.
Yeah.
But, okay, let's put it this way. If there are 53 of those in Colorado alone, he's going to go big or go home, because his goal was to do all of the 14ers in Colorado. So he wanted to do more than half of them. Calm solo down. In the winter time.
I want him to do it. I've decided I want him to do it.
Okay, you want him to do it? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does he have a GoFundMe?
Probably. I don't know. So Aaron, like, you can tell he is an adventure seeker. Yes. Obviously, he is an adventure seeker.
Yeah.
And in early 2003, he was on an adventure with his skiing partners, Mark Veverly and Chadwick Spencer.
Okay.
I kind of think that name is typed wrong. I don't think it's Mark Veverly, honestly. And I'm so sorry, but Mark and Chadwick.
Okay.
So they're backcountry skiing on Resolution Peak in Colorado. When the three of them would be caught in a grade 5 avalanche. Which I don't know what that means or how severe it is.
It sounds bad.
Hold on. So it was reportedly triggered by one of the three skiers. Most sources allude to Aaron having caused the avalanche. But one of the skiers ventured out onto unstable snowpack, which triggered the avalanche. And as far as the grade 5 is the highest grade avalanche.
Oh.
So it's, like, severe. It's a very serious avalanche. And the trio, but they did require rescue assistance. None of them were seriously injured. After the rescue, questions were raised about Aaron's decision-making in high-risk environments. And as a result, Aaron's friends would begin to distance themselves from him. They felt that Aaron had taken unnecessary risks as well as ignored safety precautions. And because of his negligence, he put all of their lives in danger. Sorry, go on.
Sorry. I was just going to say, like, I can see their point with that. Like, when you're doing something that can potentially be this dangerous, I can't find any fault argue. With them for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's not like, we went to a restaurant and he didn't tip 20%.
Right.
Yeah. Which I would still judge people for, by the way.
What if I tipped 25%?
Even better.
Okay, cool. One of his friends would describe it as a wake-up call about Aaron's extreme approach to outdoor adventures. And overall, it strained their trust in him, especially in high-stakes situations. Friends said it seemed like he prioritized personal challenges over group safety. Aaron would later come out and openly talk about the fallout and would acknowledge that he made a mistake by underestimating the avalanche danger that day. So he openly, like later on, obviously way later on, he openly was like, yeah, probably my fault.
Okay. So he was at least like, he looked back and tried to learn from it. Hopefully grow as a person. Hopefully.
Okay. Well, that was early 2003. I didn't have a specific date, but I do on this one because on April 26, 2003, Aaron was canyoneering through Blue John Canyon in the Canyonlands National Park.
What the hell is canyoneering? I've never heard that word before in my life. I'm assuming he's just exploring a canyon?
Yeah, he's exploring a canyon. He's canyoneering.
How do you spell that? Is there still a Y in it?
Yeah. Canyon? Earing. E-E-R-I-N-G.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
I needed to know how to spell it to see it right in my mind. That makes even less sense. Just go with it, okay?
It's fine.
It's going to bother me otherwise.
Visualize it. It's fine. So, Blue John Canyon, it's located in eastern Wayne County in Utah. Neck of the woods. So, This is really not far from me and Cody. We have been to Little Wild Horse Canyon, which is about 50 miles west of Blue John Canyon. I actually tried to find pictures from when Cody and I went to Little Wild Horse, just so you could see, like, from an actual, like, from my perspective, what this area looks like.
Okay.
But I couldn't find any pictures. So Google Images won this time. So I do have pictures of what the area looks like in the drive, which this area is so cool. Like, this is such a cool area of Utah, and I don't care what anyone says. They have a bunch of canyons. A lot of them are slot canyons. So there's like three pictures of specifically Blue John and then two of like an overall picture of Canyonlands National Park. And they are labeled.
Yeah. When I look at these pictures, I would be a canyoneer.
Yeah, really cool.
It looks like places that you would love to explore as a child, but you get to do it as an adult.
Right. So Blue John Canyon, it is a slot canyon, so it's super narrow, it's deep. These are typically formed by water erosion over a very significant amount of time. A lot of times, slot canyons are just a few feet wide. Some of these canyons are even, so narrow, they have set up signs at, the entrance of the canyon. And these signs are arranged that the narrow, the two posts holding up the sign are the narrowest part of the canyon. So if you cannot fit through that, you're not going to fit through the canyon. How serious these are. They're like, hey, if you can't fit through these two posts,
don't try.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, thank you, by the way, for explaining what a slot canyon was, because I had no idea.
It was not a slut canyon. It was a slot canyon.
I did say slot.
I know, but I'm making myself clear.
Oh, okay. Yes. Slot. Like a slot machine, but a slot canyon. I do appreciate the do not cross poles.
Yes. I appreciate. I mean, obviously, they're not they're stationed at where the entrance or where you start hiking is.
Yeah.
And I mean, these places, they're so deep. They're so smooth. They're really cool. Do not get me wrong. They are very cool. But they are also very dangerous because there is a very big concern with flash floods or getting stuck. Like when Cody and I went Little Wild Horseshoe Canyon, not Little Wild Horseshoe, Little Wild Horse, it is a slot canyon. And we went through and it started raining. We booked it. We were not getting caught. And we were actually almost at the top. We just didn't know it at the time.
Yeah.
So we booked it and we're not getting caught in a flash flood. We saw those clouds coming in and we were bye. Because you're not getting out of that in some places.
Oh, okay. I did not know that.
Yeah. So flash floods are a really big concern. The other concern is getting stuck, literally getting stuck. And there's no easy way out of these. The canyon walls are high and smooth. And you can see that in the pictures that I put on the drive.
Yeah.
They're tall. They're insane. If you ever have a chance to go through a slot canyon safely, do it, because they're really cool. But Aaron, he was in Blue John and exploring, and he was descending the lower stretches of the slot canyon. He was out in this narrow, wild stretch of rocks, and things were about to take a very terrifying turn.
Was he by himself?
He was.
Okay.
While he was descending, a suspended boulder would dislodge, and this boulder would smash his left hand, then crush his right hand and pin his right hand against the boulder in the canyon wall.
The twist that my spine just did,
Oh, it gets worse.
Ugh.
He was stuck, and he made a very major mistake. He had no way to call for help. He had not told anyone of his hiking plans. So no one knew, nor would know in a timely manner, that he was in trouble.
Oh, Aaron, and, come on, man.
And even if someone grew concerned, they had no idea where he was. He didn't tell anyone about his plans. So he's just out and he's stuck. I'm sure he had to be in excruciating pain. He was literally pinned, his arm, pinned by an 800-pound boulder.
Oh my God. Between a rock. Literally between a rock and a hard place.
Uh-huh.
Between a rock and a rock.
Between a rock and a rock wall, yeah.
Oh my God.
He stood there and he was stuck for 5 days with no one coming and no clue if there was a chance of rescue. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it. He would spend the next 5 days sipping on his water and rationing the very small amount of food he had brought with him, which was 2 burritos, which is what, an afternoon snack?
Yeah. Oh my God.
2 burritos and then water. For the first 3 days, he attempted to free his arm by breaking or moving the boulder. He tried various ways. He used a knife, trying to chip away at the boulder to get it to, wiggle something. He tried. He also tried to create I keep wanting to say a winch, but he tried to, wrap it up and use torque.
A leverage
leverage to pull it. And it just, nothing was working. Nothing was working. He was trapped. There was just nothing working to move this boulder. And he did try this for all 5 days, but it seemed like on day four, his focus changed. So, I mean, by 3 days, he is dehydrated. He's delirious. And he's hungry. At day four. He is preparing to amputate his trapped arm.
Sir, you know what? Yeah. I don't know that I would make it that long. I would be like one burrito left. And it's been 3 hours. And I'm like, nope, gotta go.
Someone take me out of my misery. Do I start
at the elbow or do I start at the forearm? How much do I need?
So, well, we're going to talk. So he planned to amputate at the mid forearm because that's where it was stuck.
Okay.
Because that's where it was stuck. It's a self-amputation. He has no pain relief. He doesn't have someone to help him through it. He just himself. So Aaron would experiment with tourniquets.
Okay. I'm also imagining, by the way, that this is no longer a sharp knife that he's using. If he's been using it to try to chip away at this boulder.
We'll talk.
Oh, God.
So he started to experiment with tourniquets using what he had on him. And from what I saw and what I understood, he is trapped essentially in a standing position.
No, I was going to ask. So he's not, he's probably not even been able to rest.
Yeah, from what I could tell is he's like when he is resting, he's kind of draping himself over the boulder.
Yeah.
Sources said he kind of like was able to hook himself to the boulder and like a whole bunch of things he had to do just to survive this time.
Just to freaking sleep. Rest his feet.
He starts experimenting with tourniquets and he's using like whatever he has on hand. Like he used parts from his Camelback backpack, his water stuff. He's just like doing whatever he can to experiment with tourniquets. He would also make some exploratory superficial cuts. And that is when he would realize that in order to actually free his arm, he would have to cut through the bone.
Oh, no.
And what tools he had available to him were not going to be sufficient to cut through bone. So, amputation's out of the question. So that's day four. He's trying to figure other things out. He is delusional. He's dehydrated. He's getting delirious. And on day five, Aaron officially ran out of food and water.
God. Okay. So now he's probably been desperate, top of everything else.
Oh, yeah.
He's all the D's. He's dehydrated. He's desperate. He's delusional.
Yes.
He's damn tired.
Damn tired. Me too. But like this entire time, he's just been taking these little baby bites and sips of water. Like he's already dehydrated. He's in pain. He makes the decision to drink his own urine. Like so desperate for anything. He's just fighting for his life the best way he can. And Aaron is losing time and he's losing hope. He had lost so much hope that he would carve his name, date of birth, and what he presumed to be his date of death in the canyon wall.
God, love him. So they'd know who he was.
Mm-hmm. He would videotape his final goodbyes to his family on a camera he had with him. And as night fell, he didn't expect to wake up in the morning. He sat in the frigid cold trying to stay warm and he would begin hallucinating. From what I saw, he was hallucinating before this. This wasn't the first one, but this hallucination specifically, kind of did something for him. In this hallucination, he would have a vision of himself playing with his future child. And in this vision, he saw himself missing part of his right arm.
Okay.
So he would wake around dawn the following day and he would find that his arm had actually began to decompose due to the lack of blood flow. So he's getting even more desperate, new level, and he's trying to just tear his arm off, anything he could do, and then it would hit him. Keep in mind, this dude's a mechanical engineer, okay? He's pretty smart.
Yeah.
But it would hit him. He could break his radius and ulna bones by using torque against the trapped arm.
Never would have hit me.
Nope. That is exactly what Aaron would do. He would break the bones, and then he would break out his multi-tool, no pun intended, and then using tubing from his Camelback, he would tourniquet his arm, and he would use a dull 2-inch knife to cut through as much as he could, and he would use the pliers from the same multi-tool to cut through the tougher tendons. And almost to add insult to injury, he would say that he essentially had a cheapy multi-tool with him. He said, it's what you would get if you bought a $15 flashlight and got a free multi-tool with it.
Oh, God.
So, like, not even that it started sharp and he was, like, banging it. It's just, it was already a kind of a crummy multi-tool.
And I'm going to assume here, just on, you know, percentage, that he's right-handed. So he's having to do all this with his left hand.
Mm-hmm. Probably. I don't know for sure.
Yeah. Like I said, I don't know for sure, but I know, like, I think you're more likely to be right-handed than left. Yeah. So
I don't know for his case. I don't know if he was right-handed or left-handed. So this probably all of this sucks regardless of what hand. Keep in mind, though, the boulder initially crushed his left hand as well. So that hand is injured.
Oh, my God. And see, I was complaining the other day at work about having to paint my left hand, my right hand, paint the fingernails with my left hand. And now you come and tell me this story.
You have nothing to complain about.
I don't. You are absolutely correct.
So the process to amputate his own arm took about an hour. Can you imagine how painful this whole process was? Like, I know he's already in pain due to his hand being trapped, but I can only imagine that pain had somewhat become numb or dull after 5 days.
Yeah, 5 days of, I mean, it's like you said, it's already starting to, it's already dead. Yeah.
But and now then you're just has to cut through everything.
Oh boy. So anything that's not dead is about to be.
Yeah. And he said he took as much care as he could to avoid cutting major arteries until very last. And that's what he did. He cut through everything until he was at last free. But his fight to survive was not over. He still had to make it back to his car or to help. And that was, it said his car was an estimated 3 to 5 miles away if he went back the way he came. But the issue is he was no longer sure of the way he came. Like, he was no longer sure what it looked like or if it was even an accessible exit anymore. He didn't know. And so he had to continue forward through the canyon. And he had to climb out of the slot canyon he was trapped in. He rappelled down a 65-foot sheer wall. He only had one arm. The other one has just been amputated and is bleeding. His left hand was crushed before pinning his right hand. So he probably still injured. Can't imagine that's comfortable. He is dehydrated. He is malnourished. And he still rappelled down a 65-foot wall.
And he's probably sleep deprived.
Uh-huh. And then he continued his hike out of the canyon, and by the time he got free of the canyon, he was about 8 miles from his car, is what sources said.
Jesus Christ.
He would hike about 6 miles in the desert.
With no water.
With no water. Whatever. And that's when he would finally get some hope for help. And this was actually more than hope, because he would run into the Mayher family. Eric, Monique, and their son, Andy. And this was a family that was on vacation from the Netherlands.
Did they speak English?
I believe so.
Oh, thank God.
The Mayher, and I could be saying their last name wrong. I don't know. I'm saying this as if it's a Hispanic name. But the family would give Aaron food and water and also rush to get him the help he desperately needed. Just imagine this family is on this family outing on vacation and a grimy man bleeding profusely, clearly just amputated his arm, staggers out. And
I know this is bad, but I'm imagining Jack Sparrow. Like, the walk, the look, like, not, I'm sure definitely not probably, the happiness.
No.
But, yeah, like, the dirtiness, the stumbling, that's what I'm picturing these poor people seeing this poor man coming out. Only he's covered in blood.
He is covered in blood. He's and his other hand is mangled. Help. Well, this I mean, the other hand is missing. He doesn't, he has one hand.
But can you imagine that kid going back to school and having to write, like, you know, the essays? Like, what did you do over your summer break? On your summer
vacation?
Yeah. He's like, oh, I saved an American man's life canyoneering in the desert.
That kid was the coolest kid that next year, okay? So Aaron, he's rightfully worried about bleeding out. He's begging for help. And the Mayher family, they didn't disappoint as they rushed to get him help. Now, coincidentally, a search party was already underway for Aaron. Aaron's co-workers had found him missing when he didn't show up for work for a couple days. Mm-hmm. Most sources said that his co-workers reported him missing, though some said it was his family. It could have been both, yeah.
Yeah.
A search for him would begin on May 1st, which was day 5. After he had gotten stuck. And they had been able to narrow down their search to the Canyonlands, which is the area in which Blue John Canyon is located. Now, keep in mind, Canyonlands National Park is 337,598 acres, which is over 500 square miles. So
it's over 500 square miles of prime hide-and-seek locations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so in the ongoing search, like, it's a very large area. And they had been able to locate his truck, and they had found a note in his truck indicating his general plans. Because this area, from what I found, he's not unfamiliar with the area. It looked as though seemed as though he kind of came here quite frequently. So it's likely mm-hmm. someone's like, well, let's go look in this area, found his truck. And we're like, oh, okay, the Horseshoe Canyon is the area that he's likely in. And so they were focused more on Horseshoe Canyon area.
Okay.
Coincidentally, they were preparing to search on foot Blue John Canyon the day he stumbled upon the Meher family.
He said, y'all are taking too long. I got this.
He's like, you're taking too damn long. I'm not going to survive another day.
Look, bro, I'm thirsty and I've drank my own urine. I'm done.
My arm is gone. I'm done. Okay. So they were able to rescue him by airlifting him out and I'm sure directly to a hospital. His rescue came about 4 hours after he had amputated his arm.
I have to say, though, I'm sorry. I was thinking about that. And not The thought, like, oh, he could have just waited, never come to mind for me. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, he was rescued 4 hours after he got himself loose.
Mm-hmm.
And he was still miles from his car.
Search. Yeah. And mm-hmm. they were planning a search that day, but did he have that much time for them to embark on a search?
Right.
So.
Because the family gave him food and water, so.
Mm-hmm.
That's just eerie to think of that. Yeah. Like, if he would have stayed there, he might not have been found.
Something
in time.
Else is eerie. We're going to talk about in just a second. But Aaron, overall, he had lost 40 pounds.
Oh my god! In 5 days.
But he had also lost 25% of his blood volume.
Oh my god! In 4 hours ish.
Well, I'm sure it was more than that because his hand was crushed, but he was still bleeding. He was doing superficial cuts to see if he could amputate before them. So, like, and then he's not being able to replenish that blood how you typically would because he's not not getting food and water how he needs to. Ralston himself said that if he had amputated his arm any sooner, then he would have bled to death.
Oh, okay.
And if he would have waited, he would have died in the Slot Canyon. So what he is saying is that the universe really showed him the path when he needed it the most.
Yeah.
And the reason he's like, I would have bled to death is because his arm, if he had cut it off the first day, those are really healthy, active arteries and blood vessels that are going to just try to spew blood. That's how I'm understanding it. I'm not a doctor, by the way, guys. This is how I envisioned the thought process.
It makes sense, though.
Yeah. But then the day he amputated, his arm was visibly decomposing.
Mm-hmm.
And so now those are no longer healthy. His blood vessels aren't trying to there's no blood getting to that area.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a lot of factors. And so the blood flow was very different.
Yeah.
And so he believes that, you know, had he done this any sooner, he would have bled to death. So yeah. But he survives this entire incident. He regains his full strength, obviously not his hand, but that's a different story. And he survives. The different story about his hand we're going to talk about now, because his severed hand and forearm would be retrieved from the area shortly after his rescue.
For what reason?
Well, I assume people are going to be fascinated by it. And park rangers were like, no, 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 we're not doing this. Okay. No one's going to go try to find his arm.
Okay.
According to Tom Brokaw, a TV host, presenter, it took 13 men, a winch, and a hydraulic jack. All of that just to move the boulder and recover his arm.
After all that, plus what he's been through, I better get that arm back. It's mine.
They cremate his arm and give it back to Aaron, give him the ashes. Yeah. 6 months after the incident, on his 28th birthday, he was 27 when all of this happened, by the way.
Stop it.
Yeah.
I would have died. I would have died.
28th birthday. 6 months later, 28th birthday, Aaron returns to the scene of his arm's demise. And he returns to film a Dateline NBC special. And he also scatters the ashes of his arm. He basically said that his arm's ashes belonged there. So what better place? But how insane to scatter your own ashes literally anywhere.
Yeah, I was thinking of that. Like, I got goosebumps when you said that. Because, like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Also, I feel like they should give him the boulder. Give him that, too.
So he could be like, I beat the boulder.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't give him the boulder. I think they moved it and said, sorry, it's heavy, bye.
Oh. I mean, I think it's illegal to, like, take stuff like that from national parks. I don't know.
If they're giving it to him, that's not him taking it.
That's true. I think we should write the mayor. He should have this rock in his front yard.
I think the issue is what happens if he moves.
His problem.
Okay, cool.
It's his rock, it's his problem.
Mm-hmm. So after this, he kind of becomes a small superstar and would appear in or on, depending on if it's a magazine, radio show, TV show. But he appeared on The Late Show with David Letterman, a story featured in by GQ's Men of the Year, Vanity Fair's People of 2003, The Today Show, Good Morning America, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, The Howard Stern Show, The Ellen DeGeneres Show, CNN's American Morning with Bill Hemmer, Minute to Win It, Anderson Cooper 360, CNN Saturday Morning, Enough Rope, CNBC with Deborah Norville, and he even, as late as 2008, appeared on a radio show, The Bob Rivers Show. So, like, he's doing the thing with all of the appearances. And some of these, he appeared on more than once.
Can you imagine going on with this guy, like being, you know, like having to follow him on a talk show? And he's out there like, yeah, you know, I was climbing rocks. I was climbing like miles and miles of rocks and then got stuck for 5 days, had to chop off my own arm, then finished climbing the rocks. And I made it, you know? And then the next person comes out and they're like, yeah, I made a business online selling throw blankets, I don't know, during COVID. And now it's a thriving business. And you had to walk past this. Yeah, yeah.
Soft claps. Mm-hmm. Okay, good for you.
Meanwhile, this guy can't even clap. I guess he can slap his leg.
He does have like a...
Oh, a prosthetic?
I don't know if it's a prosthetic, but he's got like, from the pictures, it looks like he's got like a hook sometimes. Or I've seen one picture where it's like a... not an axe, like a pickaxe, I guess, where like he can throw it into the canyon wall, like if he's...
I'm trying not to laugh, because are you telling me he has a multi-tool?
That's what it seems like, honestly. It could just be for pictures. I don't know. I'm just saying that's what it looks like. So he would document his... It's fine. Aaron would document his experience in his autobiography, Between a Rock and a Hard Place.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
You said that earlier, so I was like... Anyways, this was published in September 2004. The book rose to the top. It reached number 3 on the New York Times hardcover nonfiction list. It hit number 1 in New Zealand and Australia, and number 7 best-selling memoir of all time in the UK.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm. Now, after this experience, did it slow him down at all? No.
I'm going to guess no, because he did not die. And that's what it would take to slow Aaron down.
So, he would continue climbing. He climbed I should have Googled how to say these. Aconcagua. I don't know how to say it, in 2005. Also in 2005, he became the first person to climb all of the 14ers in Colorado solo.
Oh my god, he did it. In winter?
In winter.
What?
That was a part of the goal.
As if it wasn't hard enough, you have to do it in the hardest time of year.
Uh-huh. He also climbed Ojos del Salado in 2008 and Monte Pisisa? Pisis. They're like Argentina and Chile. But those were 2008. And he, like I said, he had a moment of stardom and maybe went to his head a little bit, because he even stated that the incident gave him the feeling of invincibility. He lost friends, he became depressed, he broke up with his girlfriend in 2006.
Oh.
In 2008, he signed on to, and he, it sounded like at this point he kind of stepped back from climbing because of his mental
health. Okay.
In 2008, though, he signed on to advise polar explorer Eric Larson in his 2009-10 Save the Poles expedition. I didn't see if he actually went to the Arctic frigid cold. I couldn't find that.
Oh, or if he was just like, hey, this might not be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if you're stuck here, this is where you need to cut your arm off at.
Yeah. Use torque here. In 2009, he would go on to marry Jessica Trusty. And that was August 2009. He had his first child February 2010. I know one of his children's name. I don't know both of them because it wasn't listed, but one of his kids' names, Leo.
Good name.
It's a good name. So, first child, February 2010. However, he did get divorced in 2012.
Aww.
He would turn his attention to public speaking, where, by the way, he makes bank, according to the sources I saw. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
$25K per appearance for domestic appearances.
Oh.
$37K for international appearances.
Like, honestly, that's a lot. Worth it, I would say. Like, I've never heard him talk, but I've heard his story. And I could probably listen to him talk.
Give me one second, because I'll do you one better in a minute. In 2010, a film would come out about his experience. He was involved in this film, in which he reportedly allowed Danny Boyle, the producer, and possibly James Franco, the lead actor who portrayed him, to view the video diaries he kept while trapped. Because he kept video diaries.
Oh my god, he still had them.
I didn't mention it before, but he did reportedly keep a video diary during this whole ordeal. And from what I could find, the videos have not been released to the public except for the one I'm going to show you.
Oh my god, I get to see one.
I'm going to text it to you. Well, and the reason I'm going to text it to you is because I have it on my phone and I don't really want to look it up.
And I know I said, oh my god, he still had them. I was thinking of the messages for his family. You're talking about video diaries.
He still has the messages for his family, too. Mm. Because that was part of the video diaries.
Oh, my God.
So, and I believe this was a part of the goodbyes. But I just sent it to you.
Already, though, like, he just looks so gaunt. Like, you can see his cheekbones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's, Now, I'm gonna be honest, I didn't dig too deep to find all of the videos because the sources that I could find said that, yes, he still has all of the videos, but he keeps them private. It's a very private, personal thing for him. Mm-hmm. And he has them locked up in, like, a bank security box, and he only entrusts some close friends and families to view them. So for him to allow Danny Boyle and I believe it said James Franco in most sources to view these showed like, and he said one time they saw it once and moved on. But
I don't blame him because like it's what is it, traumatic, I guess, enough for someone to read like your diary. These are literally, like, diary entries from his deathbed.
Yeah. Like, these are he genuinely thought he was dying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I would argue he genuinely was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, he allowed them to view this for the purposes of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Aaron, this is what he says about the movie. It is so factually accurate, it is as close to a documentary as you can get and still be a drama. And that film is called 127 Hours. You can watch it on Hulu or Disney if you have Hulu with Disney. And Cody and I did watch it the other night. It is very uncomfortable, but it is a very good movie. But that is the story of Aaron Ralston.
Oh my God.
It's insane. I recommend, I said there's uncomfortable parts, but that's because I'm squeamish. I recommend you guys still watch it. It was a very good movie. And Cody is adamant we've watched it before. I have no memories of ever watching it before.
Maybe Cody watched it before with some other girl. Huh?
Yeah.
Cody?
Who was the bitch he watched it with, not me.
Cody?
Oh, he's trying to say that we've watched it together before, but because I'm on my phone while we watch movies, I don't have any memories of it.
Low blow. Low blow.
But I think he watched it with another girl.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I do too.
And look at you sipping from your swig.
God,
swigging from your swig.
Oh my God, it's like a crack addiction. disgusting, Amanda.
Anyways, so that's the story of Aaron Ralston. Completely crazy, because I sit here and think there is no way on God's green earth that I am amputating my arm. I'm not even going to think about it. I'm just like, well, I'm dead.
Yeah, that's how I am here. Like, before I amputated my arm, I feel like I would just go for my own neck. Just end it all. Yeah.
Like, these I would people, never even thought about it.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't have even been... No, you know what? It would have been... It probably would have come to mind, you know? Because, like, obviously, I feel like that's going to come to mind. Because your instinct is going to be to survive. And you're, you know, like, well, in order to survive, I have to get my arm out. And there's only one way to do that. And then I would be like, well, I guess I'm going to die here.
Yep. Going to die here. Because I wouldn't have thought about how to break my arm. That's for damn sure.
I would have never figured that out. Is it all
crushed in here? How can I get in here and cut it?
Mm-hmm. I would have gotten down to the bone and then been like, damn, I didn't think this through. I should have been
at all.
Yeah, I should have been an engineer.
Damn. Yeah, so it's definitely... It's so uncomfortable to think about. The first few times I read this for research, I was like rubbing my arms like, oh my God, I'm so uncomfortable. Like, ugh.
Yeah, I said it before and I'll say it again. Aaron, calm down.
Calm down.
Calm down. Actually, calm down. You know what? Don't calm down. Ascend.
Don't descend. Ascend. Okay.
Yes. Ascend. Just like you did. Because holy crap. Sorry. Yeah.
So Aaron is now 49 years old, living his life. Let me see if I can find the one image I was trying to explain to you. Hold on. Let me. The one where I was like, it's like a little pickaxe or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Because I see one where he's still freaking climbing with his prosthetic.
Okay, it's hard to see. You kind of have to zoom in. But... And it might, like I said, it might... Oh, you know what? That's because it's the cover of his book. So it might be... I'm replacing the image. It might have just been for the cover. I don't know. But, like...
Oh, I do see what you mean.
Yeah, where it's, like, you just use it to swing into the rock or whatever.
Yeah. I still love that, like, a multi-tool did not help him at all. Well, so barely helped him in this situation.
Multi-tool.
Yeah, so he's like, that's not going to happen again.
Problem solved.
Yeah. He's like, I keep that thing on me.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's the uncomfortable,
Aaron, you're a monster.
You're, Aaron.
No chill.
Like, zero chill. I just added a whole bunch. Look, that one has the pickaxe, too. Like,
his poor kids have no excuse.
Oh my God, his poor kids. My kids have an excuse, okay?
Like, Dad, I can't tie my shoes. Son, I torqued my own arm off.
You can tie your damn shoe.
Yeah. Oh, you can't tie your shoe with your two hands?
Why don't you tie my shoe for me? Thank you. Yeah. Oh, here's uncomfortable. Hold on. It's where his arm broke. It's in a different language, but...
Right smack in the middle of his Belder amputation verden venen.
So the image I just sent was in a different language, obviously. But yes, right smack there.
It's like literally, it's like halfway between his elbow and his wrist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's, oh, God.
Ugh, uncomfortable. Like I said, dude was... He did it. He did the damn thing.
And his friends doubted his decision-making abilities.
Yeah. I will say the documentary said after this, he never left home without leaving a note or letting someone know where he was going.
Thank God.
That was the... I shouldn't call it a documentary because it was a drama. That was the 127 hours. Which, by the guys, that's like that's how long he was stuck. In case you were wondering. In case you weren't sure.
Yeah, I have a bar
Okay. Like, you're taking the bar, you're talking about a bar. Should I be concerned?
No, I am going to talk about a bar or an ear or both, actually. Lend me your ear.
He can't. He's already missing an arm.
No, you.
Oh, sorry. Not Aaron.
You really think Aaron's listening to this podcast? Aaron's scaling Mount Everest.
Aaron's busy right now.
Yeah. He's busy doing literally anything outside.
Oh, God, he's busy being... He's probably busy talking at a conference, making way more money than I could ever imagine.
He's literally making more than I make in a year talking for 1 hour at a conference.
Well, maybe not. He has to do that at least 3 times.
Not if he goes out of the country.
Then 2 times.
Okay, so I am talking, I have a haunted place this week, because I feel like it's been a while since we've done one of those. Maybe it hasn't, but it feels like
it has been. I think it's been a hot minute.
Since I've done one. So I
get your shit together?
If my doctor can't, what makes you think that I can? So, this is the Ear Inn. This is a 2.5-story federal-style townhouse. It's in Manhattan, New York. On 326 Spring Street, and it is one of the oldest operating drinking establishments in New York City. It was built around 1770 for James Brown, and I forgot to look up this picture, but you know what it is. So James Brown, he was an African-American aide to George Washington during the Revolutionary War, and you know that, like, the picture of George Washington crossing the Delaware? Like, that's what it's called. Washington crosses the Delaware. That painting where he's in the boat looking all Washington-esque. So, it's believed that James Brown, not the musical James Brown.
Okay? I'm going to be honest. Originally, that's where my brain went, was James.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that sooner. No, not the musical James Brown. This is the James Brown that
of Washington's time.
Yeah, of Washington's time. So I put that picture up. Could it get any freaking smaller?
Yes.
Let me try this one. Because he is believed to be in this photo. So I'm trying to... Is that a robot? Okay, not that photo. Why is that there? Google.
Yeah, all I heard. Is that a robot?
It's I'm looking for the correct image so you can still see the one I put on the drive. For some reason, there's a robot on the boat with them.
Hold on, I'm trying to zoom in to see said robot. But it just keeps getting really blurry, so I don't see a robot. You know how on the drive sometimes it just really doesn't work?
Yes.
That's what it's doing. So I don't see a robot.
Okay. Oh my gosh. You'd think, well, you know, we've been talking for this long. You might be looking at the wrong picture.
I might be?
Yeah.
There's only... Oh, okay. I see it now. I see what you're talking about. I was looking at the wrong one. I was looking at a different one. I was looking at the one that's correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Don't look at that one. Why would you look at that one?
Well, because that's the first one I saw. And I was like, I don't see.
I labeled him robot. Help.
Okay. That really helps a lot.
Thank you.
Okay.
So in the other photo, I did highlight. You can see there is one dark-skinned man on this boat. And people believe that that is James Brown. So, he helped George Washington out so much during the Revolutionary War. It was said that this house was built for him. And he lived in this house. He was very successful, James Brown, in the tobacco trade. And it was said that he lived in this house, and he also ran a tobacciary? That's not right. A tobaccery?
A taqueria is all I can think of.
he's He sold tobacco out the out the house. So okay. It was a, you know, back in the old days when they did that often, it was a shop and a house. He lived just down the street from Washington's Richmond Hill property. And at the time, he lived on the shore of the Hudson River. The shore of the river was 5 feet from his front door.
So off.
Now, this obviously changed over the years, mostly due to urban development. They, you know, created more land between the building and the shoreline. But at the time that this place was built, James Brown's home and the tobacco shop, they were right there on the water. So from the 1890s to the 1920s, this building was owned by Thomas Cloke. Thomas, he sold beer that he brewed, beer and corn whiskey. He brewed right there, and he sold it to sailors, pirates, and dock workers. And due to the constant shipping traffic here, the boats and like the boats docking, he had plenty of business. He was doing great. So this brewery eventually became a restaurant, and what was the backyard of the house and the outhouse was turned into a dining room, because where else do you put your dining room where the outhouse is?
Makes sense.
When Prohibition eventually came along and threatened this place, the bar became a speakeasy. Now this upstairs apartment to this building, this has also changed over the last 250 years. Mm-hmm. It was, just to name a couple, it was a boarding house, a smuggler's den, a brothel, because of course there's a brothel, there's always a brothel. It was also a doctor's office.
Is it actually historic if it wasn't a brothel?
I don't think so, no.
I think that's part of the rules.
Yeah, you have to sling a little leg to be historic.
Yeah, like if you're not doing that, then get out of here.
I've got to So, yeah, it was also a doctor's office, and then the last I could find, the upstairs is an Airbnb.
We have got to go.
Girl, yes. And they decorated this place like there's just stuff everywhere. So they've got like, you know, crocks that the whiskey used to be in, you know, the little,
yeah.
It's like a porcelain handle. They've got those everywhere. There's sailor's hat. This place is just full of it. Regardless of how the upstairs changed, TheEarIn.com claims that the ground floor has remained in the business of serving food and drink without pause. So once Thomas Cloke started selling alcohol, it has not stopped.
Okay.
When Prohibition
ended,
they're like,
this is our thing.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we've been doing this for 200 years. Why would we stop now?
Why change now?
Yeah, forget you, Prohibition.
What do you know, Prohibition?
When Prohibition ended, the bar opened its doors to the public, and it had no name. It was so famous at this point, people just knew the bar, because it was synonymous for being a place where no ladies were allowed. It was sailors only, and these sailors could... I'm pretty sure it was a brothel. It makes me wonder, what do you mean by lady? Like, do you mean no ladies or no women?
They mean no women.
Yeah. Yeah, so sailors would go here. They could eat and drink and be merry. And people from all over the world visited this bar. And it went by the nickname The Green Door. It's not... Guys, it has a green door. Okay, don't look into it.
That's really deep.
Yeah. And the motto back in this time was known from coast to coast because, you know, it was just so famous. No matter where people went, they could reference the green door. And it was said that at least one person who worked on a boat knew the bar that you were talking about. Martin Sheridan and Richard Rip Heyman, they bought the bar in the late 1970s and they had to name it when they bought it. But the Landmark Commission, they were pretty strict on its signage because it is a historical landmark at this point. So they're very strict on what you can and cannot change. And even if you can change something, you know, there's a lot of paperwork and red tape that you have to go through to change something. So instead of changing it, you'll see that they have a sign hanging over the door, and it's just your typical red neon sign that says bar. They covered the curves of the B on this neon sign that had been hanging there forever at this point. And so now the sign read ear. And that was it. That's how they changed the name. Made the name. So some people said, like, they taped over it. Some people said they, like, painted it, or they just busted the curves out. From however they did it, you can see that instead of bar, it says ear. And then under ear, it says established 1817 AD. Because I guess they had to specify AD.
Yeah, I mean, I can see it.
Okay, so today the building remains virtually untouched. It has tons of memorabilia, like I said. There's barely any space left on the walls. There's photos, there's sketches of the building, there's posters, there's old flyers and newspaper articles hanging up. One source specifically mentioned clips, like newspaper clippings of the Titanic sinking. There's old bottles, there's a sailor's hat. There's all these different images of ears, because obviously it's the ear in.
The ear bar, yeah.
Yeah. Which just sounds... Can you imagine having to dust this place?
Oh my god, that'd be awful. You need a giant Q-tip.
Not even a Q-tip. You just need a mop. Now for the haunts, right? So there is a ghost name here that is mentioned all the time. I swear to you, just about every source mentioned Mickey. And, okay, one source specifically that I loved called him an ear regular here, which is what they call their regular patrons. Oh, and they also have a live band that plays three nights a week called the Ear Regulars. I love it. I would go here just to be called that. I love a pun.
You're like, I love it. I'm there for it.
Yes. Now, Mickey is believed to be the ghost of a sailor, and it's said that he spent a lot of his time in the bar, including the last night that he was alive. And it's believed that he either drank himself to death on his favorite bar stool, or he drank himself into a stupor, stumbled into the street, and was hit by a car.
I prefer the bar stool.
Same. That's very traumatic. Brutal. Yes.
You went from he was happy in his bar stool and just kind of went a little too hard.
Just went to sleep and never woke up. Car. Yeah. Yeah. I don't like that either. He's usually seen or felt near the bar. People claim that their glasses become almost empty as soon as they are placed in front of them.
No, that's Mickey. My drink.
Mickey. Just a thirsty Mickey. One source stated that Mickey is disrespectful to women, and then it told me nothing about the details of this. Rude, I would like to be warned, please. Sources also stated that Portuguese and Dutch sailors also haunt the establishment. I don't know how you can tell the difference. Are they talking to you? Are they leaving you messages? How do you know they're Portuguese and Dutch?
I'm assuming it's a language. They'll hear...
like murmurs?
They'll hear, like, that's Portuguese. Someone speaking Portuguese. Portuguese, I'm sorry.
They hear a ghost say, that's Portuguese, or whatever. What did you say?
I don't know. Portuguese? I don't know.
Portuguese? Yeah, they hear another ghost say, hey, that's Portuguese. And then they're like, oh, okay.
Cool. Thanks, Mickey.
People that work at the bar have described having conversations with people sitting at tables who aren't there minutes later. And one person specifically described a person requesting to switch tables, and they looked away for like a second, and when they looked back, the person was gone. And it was like,
I'm switching on my own.
Yeah, like, you took too long, never mind, and don't expect a tip. But it was just too... like, they didn't see them in the bar anymore, and it was too quick for them to just, you know, get up without hearing them or anything.
You know, sometimes those servers are slammed, so they're a little slower than they think, okay?
Yeah, and I watched a lot of YouTube on this place. Y'all, this bar is hopping. It is always busy. I mean, it just seems like a great place, so. Really good reviews. Just past the bar.
Everyone or from the ghosts?
Well, both, because Mickey drinks for free.
Well, Mickey's like every... He doesn't drink for free. He drinks on everyone else. His tab is everyone else's.
I don't know the difference.
Oh. Okay.
Just past the bar, there is a hatch on the floor, and they use this as a wine cellar. And staff believes that a ghost lives down there. They say that sometimes...
With hatches on the floor, guys.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't care if it's a wine cellar. I will let my wine go bad in the air and sunlight on my liquor cabinet. I'm not going in a wine cellar.
No.
Yeah, it's fine. I'll still drink it. They sometimes hear knocking when they stand around the hatch or when they're standing on it. But when they open it up and look, nobody's down there.
You guys need to not go near the hatch.
Yeah. The bar stools are constantly moved. Glasses and bottles will fall or slide on their own. People hear loud footsteps upstairs or on the stairs when nobody is there. They hear whispering and murmuring voices after the bar is closed. And this bar... This bar closes at, like, 4 in the morning. It's, like, a very late... I mean, it's a bar in New York. So, when it closes, it's, like, late, early in the morning. People report feeling cold spots on the stairs and in the back rooms. The door will swing open without anybody there, and there's no wind to push them open.
No, thank you.
Lots of people report shadow... people, specifically around closing time or in low lighting in the bar. And then guests and workers report the feeling that they're being watched or followed around the bar, especially when they're alone.
Ugh, I hate that.
And I know that one was kind of short, but that's the ear in, guys, in the Manhattan.
Not my favorite.
The what?
Irian is not my favorite.
I gotta say, I would definitely go. Oh my god, their food looks so good. I would definitely go in the daytime.
Okay, that's fine. In the daytime, yeah. I think is acceptable. Mm-hmm. My dad's gonna say no, it's not. You know that, right? He's gonna say absolutely the F not. You may not go.
But then again, he's
a party pooper.
But they also have. I mean, look at this one picture. They have an A on their health score.
Yeah, it's an A. See? Let's go during the
day. Yeah. It's a historic place.
Let's go. Yeah. We can see the giant ear and bring a giant Q-tip.
Mm-hmm. We gotta do it.
Let's do it. What's he gonna do? Tell us no.
What are we gonna do? Listen?
Last time I listened, Dad. Oh, gosh. Okay, I like it, but I don't like it.
I will not be there at night or by myself.
I do want to go. I just want to go to get a picture in front of the ear sign and the ear.
I just want to call out something that people should normalize. First of all, look at the bar. Do you see the purse hooks on the bar by the bar stools?
Oh, I didn't even notice it, but I do like that.
Right? Also, there's a... I don't know why there's... oars. And what's the thing you turn to drive the boat? Oh, my God.
Wheel?
No, there's an actual name for it, though. Like the steering wheel, but. Oh, my God.
The helm?
Isn't that where you stand?
The wheel of a ship is commonly called the helm. The helm is a steering device that controls the vessel's direction.
Okay, so there's a helm on the ceiling. That just sounds weird. But there is. There's a helm and there's some oars on the ceiling.
I know you're going to argue with me, but everything says it's the helm.
What? So, I'm literally not arguing. I accepted it.
Not you, the listeners, guys.
Okay.
It says the helm. Dad, don't argue with me.
Google it before you argue.
Google it before you argue. Wheel of a ship. It's the helm.
Yeah. Just send them a screenshot right now and just be like, this is for later.
This is for later. You'll know why. You'll know why soon enough. Don't question what I'm telling you. He's going to then question everything. He's going to be like, what the hell is this? Why the hell are you sending this to me?
And you say, I'll tell you when you're older.
I'll tell you when you're old enough. It'll make more sense when you're older. I will get my ass kicked. We'll save that for after the Cinco de Mayo party, okay?
Okay, yeah, fair.
I think that's fair, because I would like Cinco de Mayo food. But, oh, gosh. Guys, in case you're wondering, this was a very body part heavy
episode. Oh, wow. Yeah, it was.
I don't know how we do it, because we didn't know each other's stories, and yet we still found a way that we each talked about a very specific body part. Just different
arms and ears.
Arms and ears and ashes, I guess.
Arms and ears and ashes and asses. Because of the bar
like
stools.
Yeah, I got what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that, in case you guys were wondering.
And James Brown. But not that James Brown.
Yeah, the other James Brown.
Yeah.
Get it together, guys. You can't be thinking it's that James Brown. Even though Amanda was like, yeah, James Brown. Oh, by the way, 30 minutes later, not that James Brown. I'm over there like, wait, James Brown in Washington? I'm very confused.
Yeah, that James Brown in 1770.
That's why I was confused. I was like, wait, did I miss something? Did I miss that time travel thing again? Damn it. All right. Thank you all for listening to Helen Hills Podcast. To see pictures from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Helen Hills Podcast, X Helen Hills Pod, or Facebook by searching Helen Hills Podcast. You can find us on Linktree by typing in Helen Hills Podcast. If you want to support us, please like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you have your own true crime or paranormal stories, suggestions, or just words of encouragement, please email us at helenhillspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends to listen with you as well. Bye.
Bye.